The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
On the previous episode of El Flow, in the holiday spirit of looking back on the year that's just passed, I spoke with Videnis De Julis, the producer of El Flow, to talk about the episodes that have aired so far and what surprised us or caught our attention the most. In this episode, we're going to continue that discussion by looking forward to what's coming up on El Flow in 2022. And we also take the opportunity to talk about some big issues surrounding the genre. This is El Flow, a journey to the roots of reggaeton. My name is Lilia Luciano. I'm a CBS News correspondent born and raised in Puerto Rico, the cradle of reggaeton. You're listening to episode 13, The Future. We started our conversation with Viti talking about my grandmother, Velda González de Modesti, an artist and Puerto Rican senator who in the early 2000s wrote a series of laws that were initially criticized by almost the entire genre. Because among other things, the laws limited where and when certain reggaeton music videos could be seen on television. As you can imagine, it's a sensitive topic for me because I knew my grandmother very closely. And I do not share many of the versions of the story that have been told about her and reggaeton. But I'm also a journalist, and that means having a critical eye. As the old saying goes, if your mother says she loves you, check it out. Or grandmother in this case.
I wanted to ask you, your family plays a very peculiar role in the history of reggaeton. Like right when it's about to hit its, you know, first big moment, your grandmother, Velda González, is seen as going up against, you know, the entire movement.
You know, for me, it's really interesting. And what really, why I wanted to do this is of course, the history of my grandmother, Velda González, who has been painted as some kind of villain or ultra-conservative political figure, which she was not. She was a trailblazer. She was a hardcore feminist. She was somebody who told the dirtiest jokes. And there's so many stories. And I remember my, you know, growing up with my grandmother, like she was arrested in Vieques for protesting, you know, the Navy bombings, the practices from the U.S. Navy in Vieques. She like protested in her underwear for Oscar López Rivera to be liberated. There's so many things she did, and she really, you know, she taught us to go the extra mile. And, you know, to me, it's like she wasn't a conservative. She's just saying, like, if you have a song about, like, you know, peeing on a woman and spitting at her face, and her grandkids, who was me, was like at the little disco party singing along, which is what we hear, you know. I remember that song, Maldita Buda, is like, that was a song that all the kids, and of course you would, you know, I was a preteen, and I would see the boys and everybody sang along and we danced along and it was dangerous and we thought it was so cool. And here I am being, you know, raised by my super feminist mom, my super feminist grandmother, and trying to like make sense of the values that I had as a woman who wanted to thrive and wanted to, you know, like take over the world, you know, like you're a girl, you're empowered, you can do all these things. But then you go to a party and they're minimizing women and they're, you know, so my grandmother knew that this is what her granddaughters, this is what everybody else's granddaughters were growing up to. And it wasn't about being conservative. On the contrary, it was about elevating women's rights in any way. And this is something that I love that, you know, DJ Negro told me. He's like, you know what? You're right. Like, we were excluding women. We didn't let them come up on stage. We would boo them off stage. So it was a very abusive sense of lyrics against women, some of the songs. And so that's that distinction we're going to hear, you know, in 2022 and the episodes to come.
Well, that's what I'm kind of getting at. If you're trying to look into the crystal ball into the future and say what's in store for reggaeton in 2022 and 2023 and beyond, like, can it maintain the attention span of listeners, of course, but also of like the artistic community that is like, yeah, that's interesting. I want to see how I can collaborate. I want to try it out. You know, let's try something with Justin Bieber. Let's try something with so-and-so. Let's try it. And it becomes like one of the main genres in the world.
I think what it is, it's become pop. It's taken over pop. Pop artists are dying to work and collaborate with reggaeton artists. And it all becomes, I mean, once it becomes that mix of like, you don't know where to draw the line, what's pop? Popular music. And that's where it might be right now. It's pop. And then you can, you know, you can handpick a few songs from that, right? And say, yeah, this is more where the roots are. But, you know, everything evolves. Who knows what lies ahead? I mean, part of it that to me is just bizarre. When it started, this was all about legitimizing the realities of la calle, legitimizing the stories and the people and the value of what could be born in the caseríos, in the hood. And now they, like, it's what the artists are promoting is the ultimate privilege. Like, they're the ones that like have all these, you know, it was inspirational when it was like, oh, you know, started from the bottom. Now we're here. But now we're here. The here, what people aspire to is private jets and Yeezys and like $1,000, you know, T-shirts. What's that? How is that where it came from? And that's something that, you know, having covered Astroworld and having looked at the movement recently of like the intensity of desiring to be influential on social media and flying private jets and having all this expensive stuff feels so far away from what the original, you know, reggaeton or underground artists were fighting for. I mean, maybe it's always been about being seen, but man, like, now it's about an impossible and quite frankly, like, just uninspiring dreams sometimes. What? Buying stuff that's more expensive? And that's where the hand of the United States and capitalism comes in to be. It's like the ultimate explosion of buy stuff you can't afford. You know what I mean? Like, that the conversation is very deep. It's ultimate consumerism. And that's what's happened to the music too. It's just commercial.
Well, you know, talking about that, about the future of reggaeton, I definitely think that, you know, now artists are putting out songs, you know, whenever they feel like it. They can just, you know, jump in a studio wherever they are, you know, record their verses, send them over to whoever's, you know, producing it in the studio. They get some verses from somebody else, put it together. They don't have to wait. It all happens so fast. Like you said, like the iconic songs dating back to Panama and underground and the early years of reggaeton, you know the lyrics. You want to sing them. They mean something to you, even if it's just a silly story, even if it's just a funny rhyme. But, you know, you connect to them in some way. And I do think that that is maybe a hurdle or that is a pitfall. You can't just make a great beat and put it out there with verses that don't have the same attention to them or the same.
But there are beats that are magical. I mean, Pepas is the best example of that. Like, I cannot hear Pepa and not want to like go running or start jumping. Like, there are beats that are just magical. And that's something that's still happening.
It could be the hook. It could be just that one hook.
And it's just magic. And it's just like, oh my God, this just completely improved my day, or I want to go to the club. Like, look, I'm closer to 40 than 30. Like, I think my clubbing days are not, and maybe not entirely over, but probably.
But Pepas brings up another issue, which is you're fusing into, you know, dance music.
Yes, true.
Then you have people, you know, some of the older school folks in Puerto Rico who say, you know, that
that's not reggaeton.
That's not reggaeton. You know, the reggaeton that we did, that we started, that has a bit more of an aggressive rap to it, that has a harder bass line to it.
And that's what we're trying to figure out too, right? Where do you draw the line? Is it because there's still some reggae components? Or is reggaeton just all of urbano? And that's where the, you know, Latin Grammy controversies come. It's like, you can't group all this into urbano.
It's interesting that reggaeton in its all of its iterations has had to deal with like censorship and somebody trying to, you know, stop it dead in its tracks, whether it's, you know, in Panama or Puerto Rico. And then you fast forward, and this is, you know, it's kind of an alternate reality. You fast forward to today, and, you know, reggaeton singers, producers, artists are helping to topple governments in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, el verano del 19. Uh-huh, that's true.
How do you make sense of that?
It's a sense of responsibility. It's a sense of knowing that Puerto Rico, in the face of the United States, is powerless. And, you know, I think credit where credit is due, you know, Residente has always been very critical of the invisible hand of the United States that you're talking about. And he's very pro, you know, independence. When it comes to, you know, talking about the power of the United States, it's one thing. But when it's, you know, our own people, our own, you know, the corruption or the, you know, or the abuse of power that happens from our own politicians, it's like at the end of the day, if you're Bad Bunny or Residente or even Ricky Martin, you have so much power that unless you use that power to call out an injustice or to call out something that's messed up, what's the point of it? And the other thing that we have as Puerto Ricans is this ultimate pride and this love of country, even if that country is not really a country. So I think it was about a sense of responsibility. And a lot of the artists, you know, might not have that and might not feel that responsibility because they fear taking sides, because Puerto Rico is so politically divided that if you say, you know, if you side with one political party or another, you're sacrificing half of your audience, right?
I generally am okay with that. I don't think that every person, you need to have a public opinion stance on something as if you were a politician that, you know, we're gonna check this, you know, in a couple of years to see if you, you know, if it was a bait and switch, whether you've stayed, you know, whether, you know, you've stayed committed to this cause. You know, if you're an entertainer, you have the right to just be an entertainer. There's enough information. There's enough people who do have, you know, very in-depth, nuanced opinions and analysis, and you can get that information from someplace else.
Yeah.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But I wanted to like talk about, now you're a journalist, you know, you've been trained to look at things and in a certain way to seek out the truth. And so now you're turning that lens on your own family history, on, you know, the lore, the family lore, you know, the stories that, that you guys tell each other. And I wanted to know, in a very personal way, what that's been like for you to kind of open those treasure chests that are hidden in closets.
You know, it's been, honestly, it's been a journey that's been more rewarding than I expected, because, you know, the day I went to interview my aunt to talk about my grandmother's history within the history of reggaeton, I came back with something like, you know, 20 giant boxes of photos and memories and newspaper clippings. And right, I brought the ones that I could carry with me from Puerto Rico here. And what I've learned is so much that I didn't know. She has something like the record for the most laws passed in Puerto Rico. She's been so much more prolific than I even knew growing up, because the stories we heard were few. And, you know, I've been able to like read transcripts and study some of the things she said. And it's been enlightening in some ways as to like how far advanced and into the future and how visionary she was. And it, a lot of it goes along with what she was telling us at the time, which was, look, this music is, you know, it's great. It's super. I'm an artist. She was an artist. She was censored. She was, you know, she was way ahead of her time. At no point did she want to quiet those voices. And that's what I've continued to discover. And the fact that, you know, what drove her was her feminism, was women's power. But at the same time, I've, you know, realized that perhaps her quote unquote, like, you know, crusade, I've always said, it wasn't a crusade. The word crusade goes back to a speech she actually gave in El Capitolio. So there's been, you know, it's been interesting, because I'm like, nah, that's not what she was trying to do. And then I read a transcript and she actually used the word crusade. I was like, oh God, Aya, what did you do? That's not. As a journalist, you know, I've tried to go through, you know, with my most objective eye, to go through everything that was happening at the time. And I think that there is this idea of like protecting children that sounds very conservative, you know, like protecting the innocence of children. And I think that that was, in a way, like, you know, a conservative, quote unquote, part of her. I mean, she was born in 1933. My gosh, like she had children in the 50s. Obviously, there are some, you know, social norms that to her were completely violated with this extremely explicit music. And I think she did want to stop some of it. Despite, you know, whatever intention she had, you can paint a light of conservatism in that. And, you know, at that point in her life, she was very like Catholic. But she also, and what I realized, and I remember having these conversations with her, like she also had this passion for, like, first of all, Puerto Rican pride above all, and this passion for like fueling the arts. A lot of her projects as a senator had to do with giving artists the tools to thrive, of creating Puerto Rican cultural movements and films and television. She fought for Puerto Rican creatives until she died. And that's the part that never gets told. Like, they paint her as some kind of like religious fanatic, as some kind of like, you know, super conservative something. And I'm like, that's not it. That's not it. It was the opposite. And fortunately, I had this conversation with several reggaeton artists who told me, you know what, your grandmother's quote unquote, you know, crusade or whatever actually helped us. But the history of reggaeton is often told as if that help was unintentional. And I remember having these conversations with her, and it wasn't unintentional. She knew that if they told the same story in a more metaphorical and less graphic way, it would extend beyond Puerto Rico, beyond the island. And why she knew that is because she did that herself in her character, La Criada Malcriada. She left the island. Her character went across, you know, Latino communities in the States and in Latin America. So she knew what was in store for these artists. She knew the talent they had to make something bigger. And it, sure enough, it happened. On the next episode of El Flow, reggaeton shifts into another gear and gets super sexual.
Empezó como que a entrar más en lo que era lo sexual, lo que te digo, el perreo.
The hardcore street era makes way for perreo, and a more danceable form of reggaeton takes over. But that brings a whole new level of scrutiny. and again, the police.
Mira, te está buscando. Cuando abro la ventana, afuera yo tenía 20 mil federales afuera.
El Flow is a production of XL Content Studio in partnership with iHeartRadio's My Cultura podcast network. The show is hosted by me, Lilia Luciano, and was created and produced by Vitenis DiGiulis. Production and sound design by Dixo. Additional production by David Quiñones, Mirna Couto, Hermes Ayala, and Natalia Merced. Story editing by Nuria Net. Original music by Truco. Production supervision by Álvaro Céspedes. Executive producers for XL Content Studio are Nando Vila, Isaac Lee, and Alejandro Uribe. Executive producers for iHeartMedia are Connell Byrne and Giselle Bances. For more podcasts from iHeart, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.